Williams was his name. And he is the man that really put the factory back to going after the Depression. Mm. And he was down until after the World War. But now, I think what had happened, they sold a big hunk of white stock to some other firm, some other person anyway. And Mr. Gaines came in as managing superintendent, kind of under their guidance. But then when they were able to buy that back, and it was just white, so anyway, the letterheads had the different people after that on it.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know all about the business. I'm not trying to tell you this is fact. But anyway, when they came back, he got Mr. Where the others had, whites had always been quality furniture up until that time. Mr. Bean was from Lexington and had worked in a factory up there. And he would cut some corners. He believed in production more than quality.
And what year was that, more or less, or what era?
It would have been about 1945. Now, that's
right after the war.
That's just a guess when he came in.
Okay.
It might not have been that date particularly, but you can probably find this out from other people you're going to interview. Mm-hmm. You know any of them that you're going to interview?
Well, we've interviewed a lot of the workers there now, or that were there
in the last few years when it closed down.
And we're just beginning to reach back into the historical mm-hmm. part of this whole project. Mm-hmm. So any names you have, we can maybe go over a little bit later. And
well, I don't really know who was working there, and most of the ones that was working there, well, like the upholsters, they scattered. They didn't stay in. Maybe they went, mm-hmm. To towns where they did have two or three job selections. Mm-hmm. I mean, if mm-hmm. They say you could quit in the morning at one place, 9 point, and go to work after lunch at another. And, yeah, that's in good times.
Right.
But they all got, and so many of the people that was over in the case goods when I was there are dead. There may be some living, but well, I know most is, there's got to be some living, but see, that was a lot of the, and they were highly skilled craftsmen, mm-hmm. and since then they've got more to having expert set machines. They got machinery that the experts set up, but I mean that's in the industry as a whole, and I imagine that happened down there too.
So what happened with your shop? You set it up in the late, you went out there, built it in the late 40s?
It was successful. I mean, I made a good living. I worked hard, but I found out I could sell a whole lot more than I could make. I mean, I could re-upholster. So about, I think it was 1970. I'd been selling some on the side. I tried putting it in the front and selling it, but I was selling for cash and didn't have any way of... I don't know why, but I didn't succeed in that. I was still operating as a upholstery shop, but also selling on the side. But then after that, people come in and say, I hear you can get furniture. How about getting me a so-and-so? And so we started our business on a 10%. Commission there, but in November of could have been November 69. I was working in here. I'd redone the kitchen for my wife and put new cabinets and stuff in it that time, and I'd been working under the house, running Saturday evening, but make a long story short, I got on a hot wire and got knocked out of a chair.
Uh-huh.
I was standing in a chair connecting the hot wires, and one of them got contrary, and I shook it a little bit, you know, to get it working in, and my pliers hit the I insulated pliers. Had a little bit of sense, but not much. Insulated pliers and screwdriver, and it hit the switch box, and I seen a ball of fire fly. Next thing you know, I was on the floor, and I got knocked from standing in a chair to the floor, and it cracked the vertebrae in my back. And so I was in bed for a little while till a man come. I had to get fitted with a brace. That's what it was about. For about 2 or 3 weeks, and of course I wasn't able to upholster for longer than that. But we had enough special order business going. My wife, I was in the bed in the back room in yonder. Customer had come. She didn't know anything at that time about the books and selling, mm-hmm. and they'd come in and go through the books, tell me what they wanted, and pick swatches if it was a new sofa or chair, and we would order. Anyway, I didn't get behind with any bills, anything at the time, and so after that, I decided I was going to get out of upholstering altogether. But in the meantime, I'd put this in and sold it out because it was taking up my time, and I wasn't making any money. But after that, we kind of went on, and gradually I got a backlog, and I had over a year's backlog of upholstering due, so it wasn't on the kind of work. But I finally worked it all out, and then concentrated on filling the upper shop with furniture, and it wasn't many years till I had to build a warehouse down there, and we had some showroom down there, and I built this little building in between, which now I have for a playhouse. I got woodworking machinery in it, and now I don't make anything to sell. I just, when I feel like working some, I go down there and make a bunch of gadgets, crafts or something like that. I love to do woodworking, and if you've worked all your life, you're not going to just sit down. And of course, I've got bad about sitting that stuff. I lost my wife about 5 years ago, and soon be six. And when I had my kids running a store, but when quitting time comes, they go home, and I'm here by myself, and so television is, I've kind of grown to depend on it a lot. I hate that, too, because I don't want to be a slave to television.
As a way of creeping in.
Yeah, it does. After supper, I sit and nibble on goodies and look at television.
So, when did you stop doing upholstery altogether, or have you?
I was going to tell you about that. There was a place down where, I've had two strokes, and my mind don't bring up the names of places, where the, electronics is not Western
electronics.
GE. Yeah, that plant started as Piedmont Tubing. And I had a friend that became manager of that, and he offered me a job as shipping supervisor. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, I'd try it. I didn't know anything about steel, and that's what they made, steel tubing. But I went down there at it, and I worked a month. And I knew about running out of that place. Of course, I was trying. You can try to learn too much at one time. I'd learned the gauge of the steel, and they called it oil polished, and different things like that, and the shapes of it, and size. And I was just trying to learn too much and too fast. And so I decided then I was going to stick to furniture. Hmm. And I came back and concentrated on turning this into a store and finishing up the backlog that I had at that time. Now, this was directly after I was shocked. And so it runs a furniture store, and I operated until about the year I was 65, I believe. I never thought about retiring, but my wife, we went to Florida. My family does things together, and I had my children were all grown in. All, I think all of them but one was to be there at the same time we were, and my wife had a heart attack in Florida, and she was an invalid for about 7 years, and she could get around some. We made some trips after that, but I always had to take, you know, one of my sister-in-laws, or maybe two of them, along on these trips, which was fine, but what I mean, I couldn't take her off. Look at it, she never, it was about 5 years that she could, was improving, got along pretty good, but she had diabetes too, and she was in, she couldn't go out for the last 18 months she did. But my kids run it now, it's what I'm, they steal mine, but.
And so this whole lifelong business basically grew out of your early experiences at White's, it sounds like.
Yes, this is. Now, I was about 29, though. Well, let's say I was born 1917, it's 1939, so I was about 32, wasn't it? More than 31 or 2, anyway. When I went to work at White's, it's been my work before had been, I'd worked in hoser mills and cotton mills and several different jobs, but.
Now, back when you started working there at White's, were there a lot of blacks working down there? Or?
There wasn't a lot. There were several. And there was some on, like in the glue room, there was, I would, there was more than average. And some of them had production jobs, which at that time, in most of the mills, they didn't have production jobs. They would have service jobs or something of that kind.
They were more cleaning up and such, you mean?
Cleaners and things of that, firing the boiler. Of course, now, there was usually a white man in the boiler room as supervising, kept gauges, I mean, watched the boiler and things like that, but they had to haul in coal from a pile in a wheelbarrow, and that's kind of some of them had, but like I say, some of them was production workers, you know, ran machines and tail machines in the machine room, and there were several black men at the time. But now during the war, the hard white and black women. I expect from the war on the blacks, there was more women.
And women as well? There were more women after the war than
than the war. I think right directly after, they let most of them go and got white men, but then gradually you would see them come out, and there'd be quite a few scattered in there.
And do you think, do you know how race relations were at the time within the plant?
Well, all the time I was at White's, and my life, all my life up until the, Supreme Court ruling, I reckon. I've never known race relations to be bad in Maybin. Back at that time, you wouldn't think of in a marine or anything of that kind. Mm-hmm. But, in other words, they lived on the outer edges, but there was no trouble. Well, I've never hit no winters. Now, in Greensboro, you know, yeah, they had right, a lot of story. Trouble, which yeah. is not far from here, but I never know of whites or maybe. Mm-hmm. And there was they had it's about the same way over at the Bedenfire, which was the other big employer at that time. I mean, the second biggest employer. I don't know about the yarn mill. I never worked there. I was around it much. Never worked at the bedding factory, but right from the time a year or two after I got started out here as an upholster, I would buy cotton for upholstering at the bedding factory and was in and out there a lot. And then when I started selling, that was the first thing that I sold. And well, just from my point of view, the bedding factory has opened up the world to me. And I say that, I can't remember what year it was, but it's been 25 more years ago. They gave incentive trips if you sold so many, certain items of the bed, in other words, certain qualities. You know, there is several qualities in price ranges. You'd get so many points towards trips, and then they would charter planes, and they were really deluxe trips. I mean, they looked after, they had a travel agent. First trip that I took out of the country, the first time I ever went away with them, and I don't know if they'd ever been out of the country before, was to Myrtle Beach, where we had to drive down there, but Thunderbird Motel out on the beach was one, a hotel was one of the big ones, and we checked in there and had fine accommodations, eat in the dining room, and when we got ready to leave, we just signed it.
We'd been there. This is all, like that. All from selling.
That was from a wife and me, and of course, we had taken friends from Elon down. But later, the next year, they went to Rome. No, the next year, they went to the Virgin Islands, and then the next year, Rome. And
wow.
I've been to England and Switzerland and the Hawaiian Islands. And
all just as a product of selling
Kingsdown
mattresses. Wow.
But it got me started, and I found out I could, you know, you learn a little bit about these places. And so I've had... not only my family, I know all of the children but one. And I had one son that don't like to fly. He does if it's necessary, but he don't like to. And he hadn't went on a trip. I took his wife to several of, with us as a family. I've had as many as nine go along. I had sold that much bedding during the year. But anyway, it opened up horizons.
Right.
I think
sounds
that
like
was. I don't know what about you, but I always like to see what was over the mountains and around the bend.
Definitely. Well, to sell so many goods, what was the market you were drawing on? I mean, where were people coming from to shop with this?
Chapel Hill or Cary.
Oh, so you were getting him from a very large
and occasionally
area.
From, well, you had to have something to get started. I didn't have the money to advertise and put in big stocks and things like that, so I sold at a very low margin. And people, one told another one, and, there's some of it I can trace where in mushrooms. For instance, there's a man named Ed Stewart, runs Stewart's Physical Therapy over in Burlington. Mm-hmm. Well, the first time I knew him, he lived in Chapel Hill, and he was still studying physical therapy, but his wife wanted some Sanford furniture, a bedroom suit. And it was expensive furniture at the time. And she came here to see if I could get it. I told her I didn't know, but I'd order it and see, and I ordered it and it come in. So I had a customer there. Now, that was in Chapel Hill, but he was raised around Broadway in Mammoth, which is 75 miles or so. You know where Lillington is?
Yeah.
Down in that section between Sanford and Lillington. And his family was down there. He had nieces growing up and went to school, became teachers, and got married. And they came, their mother had come first and bought furniture. And it was a big enough discount that they could afford to come and do this. And not only them, but right in that section, if I could go out and look them up, they won't all come to mind, I know, but we probably got 50 customers. Hmm. Well, you think you're coming by right much furniture now, they ain't never going to need no more. Nothing like, it's not like that. They'll sometime want to change it. And from this, now the girls taught school, and they had a principal. I don't remember exactly where. It was down there close. But their principal was a Mr. Gray. And so he started buying furniture, and his wife still buys it. He's dead now, but his wife was up here within the last 6 months, and he said that they got customers in Roxburgh and Rigdon all around.
Yeah, they really come a long way.
I think it's the fact that we sell good furniture and sell it cheap. Most people, you know, if they got a Cadillac, they're going to hold up to Cadillac prices. In other words, you'll get a discount on a Chevrolet quicker than you will a Cadillac. I mean, if you go to buy.
No.
I'm sorry I get wound up on this stuff. It's not relevant.
No. What about the relationship between the town and whites? I mean, it seems...
Well, years ago, you would think whites owned the town. I mean, they had their way about everything. But the big guy, you may have heard this before, and I'll just tell you this. The Huffmans owned the telephone company, and they began to get prominent in politics. And so there seemed to be some rivalry there, and some differences of opinion. And while the white influence had diminished, other influences have grown. Whether it's good or bad, I don't know. But whites was, although they were looking after themselves mainly, they were good for the town. Now maybe I've been here all my life, and there was several census years, you know, which is every 10 years.
Right.
So we only grow one or two, and sometimes it didn't grow any. But I know Mr. Bess, who owned Craftique, said that he just had one daughter, and the year she was born was a census year, and maybe they grew one that year. He always told her she was the one that made the census. But for the last 10 years, maybe it's taken off.
Oh, yeah.
It's doing better. Now, I have been told, and this was something more or less that I heard when I was a kid from my father, that there were several industries that would have come to Mabin, but whites kept them out. They owned a lot of the land, and they pretty much had their way about it.
And what was their motivation for keeping other industry out, maintaining their labor?
Well, they had... in other words, if you lived in Mabin and wanted to live in Mabin and worked at White's, they didn't want you to go somewhere else to work. There was a silk mill came here one time and took a lot of the young employees away, and they done all they could to get rid of it. And they found, of course, the Depression is what got rid of it.
Yeah.
It was, I say silk, but it was They called it silk mill, but it was mostly rayons of different kinds that they produced.
And do you remember first hearing that the plant was going to shut down? That White's was
going to shut down? I don't recall. Just when that, when I heard, it wasn't too long, maybe 6 or 8 was in the paper.
Yeah, I'm just wondering.
6 or 8 months before they did find the clothes. I mean, they worked it up till that.
And did that,
Of course, it wasn't White's anymore then, it was
Hickory.
But, the reputation of White furniture has dropped considerably since Hickory got it. I mean, it's not, I really don't even consider it. I know a lot of the dealers don't even consider it White furniture anymore. If they buy Hickory furniture, I don't know why they bought it out unless it was to close it down. I've been told that they wouldn't sell that as a going concern.
You know, that White's wouldn't sell it as a going.
No, that
Hickory
wouldn't sell it. Uh-huh. I think White's family, the White family, would have liked to have seen it go on, and I know the old man and the two old men that starred it. Well, kind of like you say, they would have turned over in their, not like you say, but like I've heard say, they would have turned over in their graves if they knew what had happened to White furniture.
Yeah.
But back, I think, at the time, in the early years of White's, the older men at White's, now, I wouldn't say Mr. Sam, who is one of the later. He is a brother of the man that started, but he was a younger brother, and they had already got going, and he was, was educated and things of that nature. But I think the older men were closer to the employees, and there was a time back, before I went to work, and this was before they went home with that cut, when Whites would pay the employees a 10% bonus. I mean, I've heard of them paying as high as 10%, and they would always give them a ham at Christmas. These were things they didn't have to do. They wasn't forced to do, and I have had one paid vacation in my life. Now, that was while I was working at the mills, and it was down there. And, of course, that was right after we got the union. That was one thing.
Yeah, before you got some paid
that,
vacation when the union
before that, paid vacation, I mean, vacation was a week's rest. I mean, you didn't get paid for it, but, and that was in the hose of mills, cotton mills and all. But, later on, when Western Electric came into Burlington, they had retirement and paid vacation, paid holiday, and things like that. And they gradually, some of the other mills do give them now and have the paid, not on the paid vacation, but the retirement plan.
Mm-hmm.
I reckon it kind of rubs off.
Well,
to keep employees, too, there was a time during the war when you could get a job anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And really, right now, it's not easy to get. I'm a little bit stubborn. I don't I don't want to be told who I can hire and who I can't hire. Because just anybody that comes and applies for a job is not going to qualify for what I need, but I could use another hand out here now. You know, vacation time's coming on. I got a sister-in-law that worked out there, and she has 2 broken arms. Happened at one time.
Oh, no.
She was helping her husband take the cover off of the swimming pool and stepped in a hole and broke this wrist and this shoulder. And that's the same brother he was waiting on, and he had a, this happened about 3 weeks ago, and last week he had a stroke, which was, you know, pretty massive. A doctor told me this morning I had to go to the, well, I didn't have to, but I go for a checkup every month, and I was down there this morning. And yeah, we have the same doctor.
So, you'd like to hire some more help?
Well, I would like to have one more, but it's got to have certain qualifications. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's somebody that can meet the public. I hired a boy one time. His boy went to church where I do, and told me if I had a job that summer, he'd like to have it. Well, right then, I didn't have a job, but I think it was the next summer I was going to need somebody, but I needed somebody that could help sell, too. Well, a lot of times you go into the price list, and you have number of the piece that they want. There's a lot of special order work.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have to put down the piece now for inventory purposes, even if you sell it out of stock.
So, I guess I'm trying to figure out what your problem is hiring people, and is that the nature of the workers around here has changed over time, or?
Well, it has, and I will need somebody that I think is presentable and can. Well, now I've got somebody out there at it now. I've got my brother's grandson, but he's been state 4 years, and I've several salesmen that's come in out there, and he can walk up and say, I'm Andy Fawcett. And you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And still, he can go down yonder and pick out, you know, if there's a certain piece that we've sold that we know is in the wire, he can go down there and buy the number on that. Pick that piece out and load it for the owner truck or whatever, trailer, whatever. It's just qualifications. You got to be presentable and able to talk to people as a salesperson and also know enough about it to know to and be willing to do that.
Well, you raised the interesting idea earlier that White's reputation in the industry went down after Hickory bought out, became Hickory White.
Mm-hmm.
In what way could you tell, or in what way were people talking about that change in your industry?
Well, I think maybe it came a little from the workers, and I mean from the employees, but it was just general, when you get talking about furnishers in general conversation, and the people that work for them is, and Hickory incorporated into theirs, but you know it'll soon be just Hickory furniture.
Right. But you could look at a piece and tell the wood wasn't up to par, the workmanship.
The finish should be part of it, and then smooth workmanship. And White's one of the things you can look at and tell. Now this don't make it good or bad, but still it's an indication of whether they took time to make it as good as furniture. White's and Craftique's drawers fitted inside. A lot of people's drawers, they fit. They're just in there.
Oh.
Don't fit tight, but they got a band around it so you don't see it. But now it takes a while to get that. And the cabinet man does, I mean, they have their job description is their case fitter.
Mm-hmm.
And when they do that, one time White's made a few years back, and I could get this at that time. It was a little chest of drawers called a bachelor's chest, and they made it. It had a curved front, and it had three drawers to fit in, but you could turn that drawer upside down and push it in there, and it fit. Now, that's unusual. Now, people used to take time to do that, but...
So now the similar piece would have a border around it that kept it from going in.
Now that don't make a, that don't mean it, that everything is made that way.
Right.
Usually you can that and how, what the core is. Now White's was always veneered, but there was a high quality of veneer and they usually had a solid poplar core. Well, now they places, and I think whites finally went to that one down here. May have been, I don't remember what it was before after Hickory, shipboard. All right, and shipboard will crumble. I mean, the part that's less exposed. They make cabinet tops now out of, you know, mold of chipboard and put formica on it, and you have little roll fronts and things like that. But under the bottom, that way it sticks out over the cabinet where the sink is, you'll finally see little sawdust down below there.
So, but white, Hickory White actually went to veneering chipboard? At one point?
If I'm not mistaken, we've seen some, we've got some whites that went to chipboard schools. But that just, it's not one thing, it's a whole group of things.
Right.
Mainly it's in the workmanship. Mm-hmm. And then, well, the workmanship, of course, you got to have something to work with.
Right.
But whites was a quality furniture manufacturer for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I think long as white's on, you got to come down a little, I think, when Mr. Bean come down as a production manager. But
And was there a sense of the end of an era when that factory closed down, or was it something you somewhat expected, or I'm just wondering how you felt about it?
I don't think it was expected particularly. I think people in Maven were disappointed. It was kind of an institution there. And it's something that you expected to be there forever.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
Well, now, like, for instance, they used to take great pride in it. You've heard of, maybe been there, stayed there at Grove Park Inn in Asheville.
Mm-hmm.
When they built that, now that was back maybe in 1925. Whites made all of the furniture for that. And they had, my father had a postcard picture of a train load of white furniture. And it had banners on the side from White Furniture Company, maybe.
That was actually a postcard.
Huh? Hmm. Yeah, there was a picture postcard of it. And I don't know who is, I don't know where it is now, but my father used to keep a lot of pictures and postcards and little souvenirs, things of that kind. Mm-hmm. Where if he'd go somewhere, any of the things that he valued and wanted to keep in his trunk. And so once in a while he'd go in there and we'd get to see pictures and things like that. But I remember that postcard. Well, now, he had pride in it too because he worked at White's. And
did he continue to work at White's until he retired?
No, not until he retired. After they put him on this dryer, one of my brothers...
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. You told me. He went up and became a machine oiler.
But, he loved furniture I had bought. I didn't know anything. You know, when I was growing up, really about the quality of furniture, and I couldn't afford White's when I got married, and I bought a suit of furniture. It was made at Bassett.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd had it a good... Why one day he was in there looking at it, said, you know your pulls wasn't lined up? And I got to looking now, you've seen this, it was veneered and come right, they'd be slanting and come right to a point in the middle, and it would have been very easy to line the holes that they bored and put these little rosettes with pulls in. And one of them was about a half inch high. And it's noticeable on the drawer. After I noticed it, I seen it. But something like that, I don't think it would have let out of White. Of course, all furniture manufacturers in times when they can sell it good, they let down on, well, like automobile manufacturers. I think both Ford and General Motors lost their pride for a while, but I think they both kind of worked it back up now to where they make better products.
Right. Let's go back a little bit to when you first started there. I was wondering just exactly how you got your job. You mentioned your dad didn't necessarily get it for you, and you were over in the upholstery shop.
Well, I had a second cousin, my father's first cousin, that had went to work at White's in the upholstery room. He had become a cutter. And he told me they were looking for an outsider, and I want a job down there. Well, he believed I would like it, and it paid right good. And so I'm sure he spoke a good word to him, to the foreman. The foreman hired, he didn't go through a personnel office at that time. So foreman in that department hired you, and that was true in the others too. And true in hosiery mills and cotton mills. And he put you on, so he undoubtedly spoke a good word for me. Now, I was so ignorant about upholstering the furniture that when I went down there, and the foreman said, "Do you have tools for outsiding?" Well, I told him I had carpenter tools. That was the only tools I had, but those take special tools.
What kind of tools did they expect you to have as an outside upholsterer?
A hammer, which is a magnetic on one. That's what they expected then. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm interested in. Yeah.
And a pair of heavy shears and a screwdriver. Screwdriver wasn't to drive screws with. It was knock tacks out of that, you know, you need to knock it out. Backing up a little, you might say. And you had to have, we called them crooked needles, they were curved needles. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, you done a lot of hand stitching in, and then you had to have a big needle you made your own edge. Now you buy it in rolls, but back then you sewed a piece of burlap onto your. Well, the burlap covered the springs, and you sewed a piece of burlap then onto that and filled it up with moss. That's what we used. Occasionally, we used hair for filling. Now, that's another difference. Yeah, well, in cheap upholstery furniture, you have wood wool, and wood wool is nothing in the world but except excelsior.
Huh.
Get them bales, and that's the filling you use. But they had basically moss, which was stuff harvested off of Spanish moss, harvested off a tree down in South Carolina, and in, on down in where there is the hanging moss. Like, well, they'd take it out and dry it just like you did hay and bale it and sell it. Now, we didn't buy it naturally, the factory didn't, and later on when I was out here, but We bought it from a supplier, but there were people that made their living gathering it and curing it. And the bales would be just like a bale of hay, except it would dry enough, but it makes good. Now, the change now is that they have rubberized hair pads that goes over the insulates the springs, and then layers of cotton over that, and you don't have to mess with that, but at that time, we would tear that out of the bale, pull it apart, and kind of build up a shape you wanted on a sofa back. It was a lot of camelback, you know, Chippendale and Applewhite. They had the some of the older furniture designer styles that they made. Now I forgot what the question was.
Oh, I was it started out as when you were hired and what tools you were required to have and such, which you answered.
Well, the hammer, scissors, the screwdriver for knocking up and several different needles.
And then how did you get trained?
Put me in the factory with another man that was doing outsiding, and I'd watch him and help him along, and until they thought I could go on a piece myself. It didn't take too long to do that, but it took a long time to pick up the speed the way you, because it was all piecework. Now, you were just paid by the hour until you, of course, they had the wage hour law well in by that time, and you were paid that way until you could make more on production, and when you done that, they gave you a section of bench with, we called them bucks, but they were like saw horses except padded on top to protect the wood part of it.
You keep using this term outsider or outsiding. Mm-hmm. What, I don't understand exactly what that means.
That was putting the outside on sofas. The outside arms, the back, maybe the wings, and then any trim work it would have to do, like brass head nails, and, the panels, we put them on, and a dust bottom on the bottom. But now, I worked that for a year or more and got to where he thought I could upholster, and so I just went over from the outside, and they hired somebody else outside, and you know what?
Right.
They would come in to train for these things a lot and wouldn't stay out until they got to where they could do it well enough to make money.
And how many folks were in the upholstery section when you were down there?
Well, I believe about 9 upholsterers.